Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing.
Today, we're excited to welcome Hyla Pollack to the pod. Hyla is a seasoned HR professional with over 25 years of experience in the field. Throughout her career, she's cultivated expertise in diverse industries, including high tech, health tech, and biotech.
Hyla is passionate about helping organizations renovate their culture to create a workplace where people want to stick around and do good work, and where employees feel connected.
She's also an avid sports enthusiast who finds joy in the camaraderie of team sports and the discipline of individual challenges.
She is a devoted dog lover and takes great pleasure in spending time with her furry companions.
And she's in very good company here on the pod. Welcome, Hyla.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. And I just love this. I'm so excited for this.
Yeah, dog people, you have found your tribe.
Hopefully mine will not interrupt this podcast.
So. That's fine. I think mine's sleeping underneath the desk. That's usually good for a catastrophe. Okay.
So, Hyla, you talk a lot about renovating the workplace culture. Now, I've been through quite a number of home renovations as well, and they're not that much fun. How would you say the renovations of a workplace culture and the renovations that you talk about, you know, relative to the analogy to a home renovation, how are they similar and how are they different?
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's actually been through a renovation could probably appreciate this. We did one in the middle of COVID of all times to do it. So add on the extra challenges there. But our house was such it was in such need. And, you know, there were so many signs that we needed a renovation. We actually had a hole in the ceiling, which was the biggest one. We had had a flood from our roof. And so we had a hole in the ceiling of our living room. But, you know, things were so outdated. The paint was outdated. The furniture was outdated. The floors were outdated. And also because my family, I have four adult kids, if that's a thing to say, they're adult kids. But we still, like, you know, we're very social. We were trying to hang out a lot. Now, this was, again, pre-COVID that we had all of these challenges. But we couldn't really host things because it was so outdated. And so, you know, we got together as a family. We made a plan as a family. We tried to understand, you know, what our constraints were and the challenges, again, in COVID. So on top of like the budget constraints and structural issues and timing, we had to deal with making sure that, you know, there was like nobody was in the house because of COVID. Schedules were challenging because of COVID. There were just a lot of things. People were getting sick and they were off work and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, I sort of compare that to a culture in need of a renovation. And one of the things that we did, like we put together this action plan of our family getting together and figuring out all the challenges that we're having. What's the goal that we want to reach? We hired an architect who also project managed because we needed sort of the expert advice there. You know, we tried to anticipate what the challenges were going to be. We brainstormed ideas. We had, you know, the typical challenges that you always have when you're renovating, and just tried to figure out ways that we could overcome those challenges.
I mean, what I love most about the analogy is also the truth is you probably could have stayed in your home happily without the renovation and not known how much better it would have been once you had completed the renovation, right?
Like, yes,
it still worked. The family room still had a couch in it. Like, you were still able to be in the house. However, with the renovation, obviously it brought a lot more enjoyment to your space.
Yes. Yes. And the hole in the ceiling was pretty bad. but also because we're such a social family, like, it just wasn't fitting us anymore. When the kids were little, like, My house is a fairly decent size, but it was like a sort of a long, small galley kitchen, which was okay when they were little. But now that we were all grown ups, it just didn't work for us anymore. And we really needed to identify what it was that we wanted it to be and what we were missing in order to figure out, how to get there.
So, Hila, I guess the question really is many organizations don't have a hole in their ceiling. So it isn't obvious to them that they need a renovation of their culture. What are some of the signs?
I mean, there's the very typical ones. So high turnover, high absenteeism. You have people grumbling all the time. Low morale, low productivity is a big one. So all those typical signs, a lot of the times, and sometimes they're just not as obvious where, they're not as innovative as they were maybe before when the culture was better. And that's a big one too. Like ideas aren't flowing. So people are just coming in, doing their job and going, and maybe, they're not getting the work done that they used to get done. One of the also sort of more not obvious ones, but they're very resistant to change, let's say. So, right, you want to come up with this new idea and everyone's grumbling and they're like, no, we're not doing that. So there's all those sort of more obvious ones. And then there's the underneath the hidden ones. Absenteeism is a big one, right? So
I find this interesting because I'm in the process of painting my entire house. I don't really do construction, or we do it ourselves. And my house from top to bottom we just bought it a year and a half ago. It was painted with recycled paint, which does not reflect light at all. And I wanted to live with it because it was new. And I would say it just destroyed my joy. So you look at it, it's flat, it doesn't reflect light. The color certainly wasn't my choice. Mustard yellow, no offense to anyone who likes mustard yellow, but it was in every room. And so I think that the workplace equivalent of that is kind of vigor. We don't really say part of the employee experience is joy necessarily, because most people would prefer to win the lottery. But if there's that lack of vigor and enthusiasm within the organization, I think it's very similar. And a lot of that has to do with the environment that you're in, which is so important. And I think, much like your home, where it affects you in some obvious ways and some very insidious ways, I think when you get that lack of vigor around change and a discretionary effort and stuff, it's time to kind of look around and see what's hanging on your walls, basically.
yeah, like when it becomes sort of depressing as opposed to a place where you want to be, right? A home is a home. A home is somewhere, it's warm and it's fuzzy and you want to be there. But when it gets to a point where you just look around and you're like, oh, this is making me feel bad. Same thing at work. You want to be going to work. You want to be doing, you want joy in your work. And you want to know that you're making an impact. And when all of that sort of stops and you're like, trying to, force yourself to do it, then you know that there's a problem.
And I mean, I love analogies and I love this analogy, but I also just want to underscore that we are not saying that you need to feel like your workplace is like home, because that is, work is still work. They call it work for a reason, is what I say to my kids all of the time.
100%.
But it can be a place where you don't dread going to every day, where you can bring your best work, where you can be innovative. I think that's what we're really saying.
Yeah, I totally agree. That whole, when people say, oh, it's work is supposed to be like a family. And no, they definitely are your coworkers. Family is family, no question. But I think if you can find joy in the work that you do, there that's the ideal. That's right. And they, that saying, if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life. Okay. You still are working, but yeah, finding joy in your work is just a blessing.
Look, I'd like to fire some of my family members. I might be alone in that, but there are some family members that absolutely need to be disciplined. But that's a whole other story.
Think we have fired some family members.
Similar to when Jennifer said mustard yellow, there's nothing wrong with mustard yellow. Mustard yellow is really nice for some people. Similar to culture. Not every culture is going to fit every organization. And what I find fascinating, Hyla, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is that leaders aren't always the best at describing the culture that is really in place. They are often very good at describing the culture that they would like to have in the organization. And there's often a discrepancy between that idealized culture, even the culture that the leaders believe that the employees are feeling or the way that they are working is reflective of, and what's really going on. Talk to us about how in your work, you uncover not only what that ideal culture needs to look like and how it fits within the organization, but also understanding what is actually going on at the employee level.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, to do a culture renovation, you do need top down in the way that the executive team or the leaders of the organization have to buy in, right? They have to know, they have to really appreciate that there's a problem. So it's a little bit of a vicious cycle here. There has to be sort of this opening where they say, yeah, we kind of know something's wrong. We just don't know what it is, maybe. But in order for it to work and in order for it to be successful, you need to hear the voices of as many people as you possibly can. So you need to engage, you know, not just the leadership team, but you need to engage people from all levels and from all departments. Those diverse voices are, you know, the only way you're actually going to hear what's going on. And they also, you have to create a safe space for them to actually share what they're feeling and what's going on. And so the way I do it is I actually meet with the leadership team briefly first to sort of get their understanding of what the culture is. Then I meet with the employees. And like I said, you know, as diverse as I possibly can. So all levels, all departments. And it's interesting to hear the difference, the delta between what the leaders think is happening and what actually is happening. And once I bring and shed the light on that with the executive team, then we can start to work out strategies on how to fix some of these issues.
So then what does the start of that action plan look like? Once you've determined that there is an issue, where do you take it from there?
So I do a three-step action plan. So the first one is the listening strategies, right? Like what are the listening strategies that we're going to do? Whether it's surveys, whether it's meeting in person, you know, I try to sort of hit all levels like that. And once you hear what's going on, then you sit and you make clear goals, because if you don't know what you're striving for, then you don't know when you're going to get there. So we sit down and we actually sit down and set those clear goals of what they want. The next thing is to come up with a strategy on what they can do to renovate the culture. It could be a coat of paint, right? It could be very mm-hmm. simple things. Or it might not be so simple. It might be breaking down walls. The idea, hopefully, is to keep the main foundation, which are the values of the company. I compare those to the values to the foundation and trying to keep as much as you can. So you come up with the strategy. And then one of the key things is communicating that and keeping people in the loop so that they understand, and managing the change there. So there's a huge change management piece in there. And then finally, it's also making sure that the leaders are buying in and are acting as role models for the organization, because if they're not going to change, then there's no point in doing that. And then just making sure that there's a listening strategy to keep it going. That's the sort of the maintenance, right? Because once you do a renovation, that's fine, but things break. We all know that. And then you just have to call in the repair person to come and fix something. So you always have to be sort of in that maintenance situation where you're listening and fixing, listening and fixing.
I've heard two different sort of sides of culture from various clients and employees. And some of them will say, well, culture starts at the top. Obviously, leadership is responsible. And then I've had leadership sometimes say, hey, we're outnumbered here. Employees create the culture. It's you folks coming in every day and the way you behave and what we're willing to participate in that actually sets the culture. We can only do so much without your cooperation, which is true to an extent. I mean, you can't, you know, drag employees uphill with you if they're not on board. So how do you balance those two different perspectives to get everybody working on the plan together?
So, in my opinion, I don't know that anybody actually owns culture. I think it's just like a house, right? You have the owner of the house, which is, the parent or, whomever owns the house, but everyone contributes to the culture. The family that you have contributes to the culture. And at work, every single person contributes. Listen, I've been in HR a very long time. It used to be that HR owned culture. And if the culture was bad, it always fell on HR.
Yeah.
And I used to fight back with that. That's not the case. We can help identify some of the challenges, but we don't own culture. I don't know if culture can be actually owned, to be honest. Everyone contributes, but the responsibility of the leadership team is to enable employees and actually role model the culture of what they want, because if they're not doing it, and one of the questions that I ask when I meet with team members is, what are the behaviors that, and I use the word punish, even though I don't really mean punish, but what are the behaviors that you actually punish? And they're like, oh, well, we punish when somebody is late all the time or when somebody is rude to somebody. And then, but I'm hearing from the employees that people are rude all the time, and
Yeah.
that leaders are rude all the time. So, do you really punish that? And you get down and you break down the layers and layers, and you get down to it, and they're like, oh, yeah, so I guess we don't really do that. So, do they own it? I wouldn't say ownership, but they definitely have a huge responsibility to maintain a good culture.
I think you brought up two really important points. And so the first one is that when behaviors are not aligned with culture, it actually deteriorates the culture. And so, culture is not only about the behaviors that we want to see, it's also about the behaviors that we don't want to see. And I think the second piece there, Hyla, and again, like I'm giving you a lot to respond to, but it has to do with everybody representing. And sometimes when someone is not representing the culture, it could be more detrimental to the entire organization to keep them or to not address the fact that they're not representing the culture than it may be to lose them. So talk to us a little bit about what you've seen in your travels.
I mean, I would suggest it's probably one of the biggest challenges in any organization. And it's typically the heart of toxic culture. There's probably one bad apple or, maybe one or two, whatever. But that behavior, and oftentimes it's in a leadership position too, right? Like it's in a higher position. And I've experienced it. There's no question. I've experienced it. I've worked in places where the CEO felt that this one person was absolutely necessary to the success of the organization. There is no way the company could succeed without that person. And so they got away with a lot of things that other people couldn't get away with. And we used to have these conversations on like constantly. Well, what if that person, God forbid, got hit by a car and was in the hospital for 6 months? Would the company succeed? Like, would we be okay? And he'd say, well, I guess so. I would put so and so in this and so and so in that. And when you get to the heart of it, everybody's replaceable. We all know that. We've all heard it, but sometimes it takes a little nudging to get there. And it typically is the biggest challenge of an organization, the bad behaviors of a certain few that cause the ripple effect that affects the whole organization. And those are tough conversations to have, but they have to be had, those tough
Especially
conversations.
if, there are situations that I've come across where the founder is the person hypothetically who is having these challenging behaviors. And like, how could you manage without the founder? The founder is actually the base of everything we do. And I say that's true. And the founder doesn't need to have direct reports, or the founder doesn't need to be addressing audiences on a regular basis. If the founder has been wildly successful, it's likely because of some technical skills if they don't have the people skills that align with the culture. And so sometimes it's about surrounding people who are maybe irreplaceable at this stage of the game, but not just allowing that to sit because they are who they are, because that sends a very, very clear message. We say one thing, but we do another, or the behavior we're expecting is only expected from certain people. And
Yeah.
you are literally punishing the people who do model the behaviors you want
Yes.
by forcing them to work with somebody who can't or won't. It's absolutely the worst thing you can do. That drives me insane. And
Yeah.
yes, people can be very difficult to replace. Nobody is impossible to replace. And there's no guarantee, like you say, that anyone's going to be there forever anyway. So you might as well add some flexibility in, get your succession plan going, and make sure you're never being held hostage by some toxic polluter. And then you're spending all your time and money just replacing the constant revolving door of everybody else being forced to work with that person. It's the worst thing you can do.
For sure. And if you actually weigh the cost, right? If you look at the high turnover, the absenteeism, the fact that you can't hire people, all of those things that actually cost money. If you're losing employees and having to replace them and onboard, and we know how much time and money it all takes, then the cost, right, of just keeping that one person, it can't be good for the organization. It can't be profitable for the organization.
Now, bad behavior is also a continuum. And I want to say toxic behavior, bullying, harassment are illegal. There are a lot of things before you get to real toxic, illegal types of behavior that are, maybe tougher behaviors, maybe behaviors or organizational culture that puts up with a lot less questions, or there's a lot less room for errors, etc. And at the end of the day, I'm not here to judge whether that culture is or isn't an effective culture. I would say that culture is or isn't a good fit for you as an employee. And so, Kyla, how would an employee or a potential new employee or a potential new executive even be able to really determine whether or not they're going to be able to be wildly successful within a particular culture?
It's very hard to predict anything, right? Until you're in it. That's the first thing. I think, again, if you look at the foundation, the cultural foundation, it always comes back to the values. If it's a company that actually values their values and lives their values, then you'll know if there's a certain kind of alignment. I would say that there's a very good number of organizations that don't live up to the values that they and their words on a wall. I've lived it. I think many people have lived it. And when they go back and say, well, what about, that value? What about honesty or trust? Or, how can we trust, all those words? That's when all this misalignment happens. But if there's accountability, let's just say that, if there's actual accountability in an organization and someone can realize, oh, crap. Yeah, I did screw that up and I'm going to do my best to change it. That goes a long way. But if there's not alignment with the values, then it's going to be a very challenging place to be.
So, Hyla, tell us about the most challenging culture that you've ever had to work
I mean, I've had a number.
with. I think we
a
all have. There's a
no
list.
And on the flip side, I've been in some amazing cultures.
Yeah.
And there's also been times where I'm at this amazing organization where I love the culture. 6 months later, I don't love the culture. But then it could be, again, one change, one person, one decision that's made, and then sort of everything feels better again. So it's like this continuum, right? It's this up and down roller coaster where it's not going to be every single day this awesome party to go to, right? Like that's just not life, and there's going to be its ups and downs. Now, one of the most challenging cultures that I've been in was one where one of the values was challenge each other. And it's great to do in theory, but as a value, it became so exhausting. So every time you put something out to say, listen, I think this is what we need to do, it's challenge, and so you're fighting for every single thing. And it got to be just very exhausting. Now, were they living up to their value? They were. And when I went to the organization, I thought, oh, okay, I can handle that. I'm up for the challenge. But on a daily basis, it just got very, very exhausting. And I think people were exhausted. And then every time there was, some kind of a battle, they would bring it back to, well, the value on the wall is challenge each other. So, you had to manage what was a challenge and what was I'm just going to be a pain in your butt and I'm going to, fight you on this.
Yeah, they really took it literally, it sounds like.
Literally. And I had
Literally
many
everything.
discussions with the CEO on maybe it shouldn't be a value. Like we could value it as an organization, but maybe not a value on the wall.
And what are some of the hallmarks of the most amazing cultures you've worked in? I always find, like, when I used to go It's been a long time since I've interviewed for jobs, but when I would go in and the receptionist looked cranky, I'd be like, this is literally supposed to be the most welcoming person in the organization, and they look like they don't want to be here. This is a very bad sign.
So, I mean, like when there's an amazing culture, the alignment that you have with your teammates and everyone's feeling good about working, you have that innovation, those ideas that are flowing. And instead of being put down for them, they're thinking like, oh, that might be a good idea. Maybe we can try some version of that. Or, you know, so there's the juices are flowing, let's just say. Highly engaged employees, highly productive employees. You know, not everyone's going to be happy. I typically don't like to use the word happy because, you know, it's just so, it's a fluffy word. And I've argued or challenged CEOs when they want happiness as a value because,
We have a whole thing about HR people getting the title of Chief Happiness Officer in our first episode. I think, yeah,
I
no,
would
thank you.
fail at that so badly. You know, especially when somebody comes and says, well, I should be getting paid more for what, you know, because I'm doing such a great job. You know, those conversations, and I've had many of them. It's like, well, we kind of pay you to do a good job. Just saying, right? Like, we don't pay you to just come and do an okay job and then pay you more to do a great job. You're actually hired to do a great job, and that's your salary. So people would not be necessarily happy if they were talking to me about those things. But you know, you just want to be able to attract good people and retain good people, and having those people do good work, that I think is the hallmark of a good culture.
Let's talk about that though, because I think we're almost on the verge of hitting on a sensitive topic for some business leaders. There is a generation of people who have a reputation coming into the workplace, whether it is valid or not, that they need happiness and they need constant reinforcement and they need constantly to hear all of the positive things and want to have the parties and need to have the free snacks and free lunches. Free snacks, free lunches, and happiness don't make culture. So talk to us a little bit about, even bouncing back at people who are suggesting that the culture of the future needs to be one that welcomes snowflakes.
Now we're getting down to it.
Now we're getting
Oh,
down to it.
yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I used to actually be frustrated with those employees that just wanted everything. And then on the other hand, I also was like, you know, good for them for kind of challenging the status quo, because I never did that when I was young and I was an employee. I got paid what I got paid. If I ever went to my manager and just said, yeah, you know, I should be getting paid more, it just would never have happened. Those conversations never happened. We went to work, we did our job, we did what we were kind of told, and then went home. So I do appreciate the boldness of a lot of sort of this generation, but I also don't appreciate the entitlement of a lot of people that are coming into the workforce right now. And there's a lot of discussions that are being had about that entitlement. And again, it's sort of bringing them back to, this is your job and that's your salary. Like, you get paid a salary to come do your job. You know, that's pretty much the only thing that the company actually owes the employee, right? Like, they do their job. That's the transaction. I hire you, you do a job, and you get paid for your job. Everything over and above that is great, and you want people to feel good, and you want people to, you know, feel valued, and to so that they can do their best work. But some of that fluffiness, I think if you give them some autonomy to make some decision making once they're mature enough to understand what the impact of those decisions are, I think if you can give them some kind of job satisfaction so that they see the impact that they're making and appreciate the impact that they're making, I think those are things that ultimately will get them farther. And trying to explain that ping pong in the workplace and free lunches probably not going to get you far in your job and
I
your
mean, I
career.
still remember coming into the office for the very first time into a brand new office space, multi-million dollar renovation, all of the new things with the ping pong and the pool table and the free snacks and the coffee machines and the ice buckets and the whole thing. And we sent out a survey to say, hey, what does everyone think of the new space? And the answer was overwhelmingly positive. But then there was that one, which was the bowls in the kitchen are too small.
Oh my goodness.
Now, at the end of the day, we asked, and in fairness to this particular employee who responded, the bowls in the kitchen are too small. Their perception was, you know, we were either going to talk about it behind your back or we were going to let you know. And so we gave you an opportunity to understand that if you want us to enjoy the kitchen, we need bigger bowls. And I'm like, that's interesting. And I do think that there's a piece of that, Hila, where it was, I never had a bowl in the kitchen when I was coming into work. Like, it was bring your own bowl, you know, or don't eat lunch. And the world really has changed. And we do ask for feedback. And then we receive the feedback. Is it culture? Is it incorrect? Is it bad to hear what people really have to say? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's about setting expectations and setting very clear expectations. And if you're asking questions that are talking about the decor and whatnot, then you're setting the expectation that they have a voice in what's going to be available as part of the decor or the kitchen or whatever. If you're setting expectations and saying, hey, we really just want to know if you feel comfortable in this space. Yes, or it's a yes or no. It's not a yes or a yes, but I think bigger bowls would make me feel more comfortable. But it's just about setting the expectations. When we put out surveys to the companies, it's sometimes saying, we just want to know how you're feeling. We don't know if we can make a lot of significant changes, but we really want to have our hand on the pulse so that we do at least appreciate how you're feeling and we'll do our best to, you know, to make things better, but we can't do everything. And setting those clear expectations and communicating that and keeping people in the loop, I think is really important.
I think one thing that strikes me is that there's a big difference between having a sense of agency and being able to advocate on behalf of yourself and entitlement. And so I think sometimes we get accused of thinking everybody is entitled, but actually, as you stated, you know, we have actually a lot of respect for people who will advocate on their own behalf. As per your early experience, I didn't. You know, I certainly would have had done better in my career if I had been a better advocate on my own behalf. So I really respect when employees of any age or generation have that sense of agency, but that is totally different than entitlement because it's based on your value. It's not based on you just existing.
Yes, I 100% agree with
that. So Hila, give us an example of some companies that have successfully renovated their culture and not necessarily by name, but what does that look like and what does it feel like and how do you know that you're there?
So I can give the name because it's actually out there, but one of the most famous, you know, culture renovations was Microsoft back in, I want to say it was probably more than 15 years ago. So before, let's say 2010 or something, it was known to be a very toxic culture. It was competitive where you have to tier yourself against other people and how you're performing against other people just led to so much toxicity. They weren't being innovative. They weren't keeping up with the Apples of the world. And they hired a new CEO who really came in and really like took a look at what was happening and shifted that culture to become more innovative and less competitive and less toxic. And it became less of a know-it-all culture to what they call a learn-it-all. Like everyone was willing to get better and willing to learn. They took on a growth mindset approach. They redid the performance review process, like all of those things. And so the impact of that culture renovation now, and this is all just based on surveys and impact and productivity and output and all of those things, is their financial performance has improved over the years. They've increased their innovation, their morale has improved, their retention has improved, their hiring rate has improved, like all of those things that impact a good culture. So that's out there. You can Google that. It's quite a famous culture renovation that happened, and it wasn't fast. I think it was over something like 5 or 6 years. And that's also good. Like, it's not a bad thing, is let's fix the things that we can fix right now. Let's do the small changes now, and we'll slowly get to the bigger ones that will ultimately make the largest impact.
I think that's a really good point to cover too, is that this isn't a 3 to 6 month project. I feel like as consultants coming in, you go, sure, okay, well, yeah, let's work together in the next few months and see you. And it's like, few months, years,
Exactly,
not
exactly.
months. Hyla, how do you recommend that people incorporate some of this strategy and thinking into their recruitment process?
I think, again, you want to make sure that you have the foundation before you're actually recruiting people, right? Like, it's those sort of foundational strengths that you need before you're recruiting. So, but once again, the impact of that good culture is when you're recruiting people, then you can actually say, people love working here. And you can talk to any employee here and they like coming to work every day, which makes recruiting so much easier. As opposed to, if they're coming into the office, if it's not a Zoom interview and they're actually coming into the office and they see and they look around and people are like, those glassy-eyed and moping around. And, you can tell, you can totally tell when you back in the day when you used to go into the office all the time to interview, that buzz, that energy, you could really feel it happening. And on like contrasted to that, you could also feel when things were like, oh, I don't know if I want to work here. People are in their little boxes and they're doing their own thing. And it could work for a very introverted personality that just wants to be in their little box. And that's a whole other discussion about personalities. But somebody that really wants to work with other people and sort of feel that, it's very important in terms of recruiting.
So we have a segment of the show, Hyla, where we ask all of our guests some rapid fire question. Are you ready?
Okay.
What's the one thing you believe small businesses can do today to change the game for their people?
I think that they should be listening, surveying their employees to actually get the lowdown on what's happening.
All right, now we are going to do rapid fire. All right, Hyla, what was your first job?
Oh, I was working when I was 16 at a retail store. It was called Wildside. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was, I don't know if anybody remembers the It store. It was kind of like that, where it was just
Yeah.
like these fun, kind of crazy things, cards and just fun things that were being sold there. And it was such a fun job. I loved it.
And what's your best job?
Maybe that,
Oh my, it's early.
yeah, I mean, it feels like just yesterday, but no, my best job, I don't know. I've had so many that I've loved. My best job was probably being head of people at a health tech organization. I was employee number 6 and left when we were like 120, and it was just an amazing company to be at.
Biggest mess up at work.
Can I come back to that?
One would think there's probably a ton to
I
choose
know, but I want to know what I should say
but
in
here.
public and say public. That's going to be aired out there.
Okay,
Let's move to another one.
best learning.
Best learning was definitely at my last organization because it was an industry that I was not familiar with at all. It was a biotech, and I learned I had not been taken biology since I was in high school. So learning a new, basically a new language and the way people think when it's a company that has a ton of people with PhDs and they think differently was huge on my learning curve, and I loved it.
Your quickest quit.
I never had a quick quit. I stuck around because that's what we did. Like,
I mean,
literally,
all
that's what
of
we
these
did.
people who left all of their jobs, Jennifer, there's something wrong with us.
I didn't
I
love my
know.
jobs all the time. It wasn't that I loved the job, but that's what we did. We had to stick it out, right? We had to have this, we were told, thick skin, stick it out. I wouldn't have been brave enough to just leave quickly.
I love that.
We're courageous. That's
We're
what we're.
courageous. That's right. That's what it is. It was a positive. I was a terrible waitress. I'm just saying, it needed to happen. I really couldn't get the timing down pat. So, Hyla, how can companies get in touch with you if they are looking to renovate their culture?
The best way to reach me is probably on LinkedIn, as long as you spell my name properly. But probably once you put in HYLA, my name is probably going to come pop up. But yeah, LinkedIn is definitely the best way to reach me.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you love this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.